This is not just a commodity anymore. You can't sell sheet music. There is a certain standard for how your music has to sound, and if you don't deliver, you don't stand a chance. So I think we have to make an important distinction here, as that term, music production, has come to mean so many different things. We will not be talking about mixing or mastering technique here. The music production I will be talking about in this book is a creative one, using effects and sound design to tell your story and ride the energy curve. Music production is finding its way into songwriting. We have entered an era of sound design to a degree that most new songwriters these days know more about compression than arrangement. The old songwriting rule, it's not a good song if it doesn't work on piano, no longer applies. Just think of rap, metal, or dance music. The writing and the whole production process have become one. In this chapter, we will look at how production can be used creatively to help us ride our energy curve. Part 1. Hype in production. Production as a tool for setting hype ranges from extremely subtle techniques to major changes in sound. Think of the following techniques in the same way as when we looked at different vocal modes or guitar playing styles. Do this, and you will see that creative production really isn't that different from all the other songwriting elements, and that you already know most of the techniques in some shape or form. So here they are. Fattening and thinning out. This can be achieved through layering, compression, a filter, chorus, and distortion. It's simple, really. The thicker your instrument, the higher the hype, and vice versa. Layering and compression are similar to doubling a part. Filters can be compared to thinning out our texture through arrangement, and distortion we have already discussed when we talked about vocals, bass, and guitar effects. Perceived volume, to be controlled through compression and volume automation. Hype, as we have learned when we talked about parts, can be controlled by volume. For example, pulling down your verses a couple of decibel, thus decreasing its hype level, gives your chorus some additional lift. Dimension and space. Think stereo-enhancing effects, reverb, and delay. Dimension is interesting, as really there was no way before music production to use it as a means to control hype. The rule is this. The wider an instrument is spread, and the closer it is to the listener, the higher its hype level will be. Over the past couple of years, reverb has made its way back into mainstream music, but part of the reason it was out for a while is because it lowers hype considerably. Remember that space is relative. So if all your instruments are dry, your mix will still sound low in hype. You need some wet instruments in the back to make sure your dry instruments jump forward. Similarly, if your entire song is wide, your chorus won't stand out as much. New instruments. The usual suspects here are pads, percussion, synths, and samples in general. You might actually completely change the arrangement by adding new instruments. This, of course, leads to an increase in hype. But be careful about this technique. I have found myself more than once adding instruments to a verse to make it sound better, as in fuller and prettier, while forgetting that as a side product, I was also increasing hype. The result was that my chorus sounded tiny in comparison. So always listen to your enriched section in context. Can you still hear the energy curve? Processing. Any effect can increase hype if applied noticeably. This includes glitchy effects, distortion, delays, low-pass filters modulated by an LFO, what we know as a wobble, tremolos, sidechaining, and on and on and on. As you can see, most of these techniques bring the rhythmic subdivision of the instrument to a higher level, which results in an increase of hype. Creative production. As I said before, modern pop music is filled to the brim with vocals. For example, 88% of Katy Perry's Chain to the Rhythm has vocals on it. Using vocals grabs our attention like nothing else in music. The song is literally speaking to us. It comes as no surprise that producers have found ways to add more vocals to a track without being all too obvious about it. And since using vocals raises hype, here's a few creative production techniques to consider for your next production. Atmo backings. Sia is a big fan of these. These are backing vocals that go through a whole chain of effects to a point where they are barely recognizable as vocals. Often used to fatten up a chorus, they are a modern take on the classic backing singers. the mustard hay. For a while you could hear the sample, originated by DJ Mustard, on almost every major hit song on the radio. Now it's largely disappeared, but the idea still stands. Have an instrumental section you want to spice up? Add some hey, hey, hey's to the offbeats, and you're good.
Vocal glitching.
I'm almost certain that when this audiobook releases, this is going to be gone from the charts already, but as I'm writing this, you hear it everywhere, and mainly in post-choruses. Basically, a vocal line is fed into a sampler and treated like a synthesizer. This is just another way of making a synth lead sound more like a vocal, and almost automatically, we can't stop listening. Part 2, tension in production. Production is used excessively to introduce tension to music. This can go from barely noticeable to very obvious and everything in between. All the fine-tuning is under your control. There are two important ways of introducing tension: automation and sound effects, or SFX. Automation. All the effects above can be automated to introduce tension to a mix. Let's go through them. Fattening, thinning out. For this technique, additional layers are slowly faded in. The threshold of a compressor is gradually increased to let more punch through. The cutoff frequency of a filter is automated, or the wet dry knob of your favorite distortion or chorus plugin is slowly opened up. Perceived volume. By slowly increasing the volume of an instrument, the producer is mimicking a crescendo, which, as we know, introduces tension. For the first time in history, volume automation allows us to crescendo any instrument we want, even instruments that normally aren't able to do that, such as the organ. Dimension and space. Tension can be introduced by automating the dry-wet knob of your reverb or delay, or by changing the wideness of your stereo enhancer. This adds another dimension to your mix and opens everything up. New instruments. By bringing in instruments halfway through a section, you are again affecting the arrangement. Processing. Gradually changing an instrument's sound can be used to introduce tension. This may remind you of the chapter on vocal effects, where we looked at how singers can increase tension by changing their vocal mode mid-section. Processing is the exact same thing. Think of it as a new set of effects you can use to communicate to your listener how your singer feels. Sound effects. Think swooshes, sweeps, uplifters, downlifters, and reverses. Although it doesn't feel like it in the production process, this is actually just another subpoint of automation, since most of these are just white noise going through an automated filter. All of these can be used to control tension, whether positively, swooshes, sweeps, and uplifters, or negatively, downlifters. Creative production.
Reverse reverbs.
Want a melody that starts on a downbeat to have the same driving quality as one that uses a pickup phrase? This technique can come in very handy because it introduces tension to the section right before your vocal starts.
Reverse delays.
Similar to reverse reverbs, the only difference is that we're using a delay instead of a reverb. Go figure. Part 3. Implied tension in production. Because production is the element which you have the most control over, it lends itself particularly well for subtle maneuvers like this. I want to share just a couple of my favorite techniques here to give you an idea of what is possible with production.
Low-cut filters and high-cut filters.
By noticeably cutting off a big chunk of an essential element to your mix, you are audibly thinning out the arrangement, which results in the desired implied tension.
Auto filters.
Since filtering always has an aftertaste of tension, using auto filters on an instrument can also be used to create implied tension. The direction of the cutoff isn't important here. The important bit is that we can hear that there is some filtering happening.
Heavy vocal processing.
It is possible to imply tension on the vocals through effects, such as compression, certain kinds of reverb, delays, or autotune. These are all very subtle, but the tension comes from the fact that we subconsciously notice the difference between what we hear and what we know a voice is supposed to sound like. Cave of sound. While the productions of the 90s and early 2000s largely followed the wall of sound formula, modern pop seems to follow a cave of sound approach. The instruments, drenched in reverbs and delays, sound very far away from us, and all of our attention is drawn to the vocals in front. It's this contrast that sounds so tense. To sting using this technique, occasionally add some exaggerated reverb to the vocals. Cutting breath. Normally, when you edit a vocal recording, you pull down the breaths somewhat, as they can sound sharp once the compression is added. In recent hip-hop, however, more and more producers have started to cut out the breathing completely, which takes away any kind of predictability when we will hear the next line. We've talked about the quick rap bursts before, and this technique amplifies this effect even further. Songs that use it literally sound breathless.
Stutters.
Cutting up the vocal track doesn't limit itself to the breathing, of course. Many producers like to cut the vocals into bits and pieces to create effects like stutters or other glitchy sounds. One way to do this we already discussed, by treating the vocals like a synthesizer. But the technique is also being used in text-heavy sections to add interest. And again, this interest comes from the implied tension of expecting the vocals to sound realistic. Summary. Hype can be altered by fattening or thinning out, by using dimension and space, by adding new instruments, through processing and creative production. Tension can be applied by automating all the above or by using sound effects. Implied tension can be achieved through the use of high-pass filters, auto-filters, vocal processing, and creative production. End of part 2. That wraps up our elements. Glad you're still with me. Before we move to part 3, I have a bold statement for you. Even though you might think you've learned a lot from this audiobook already, you really haven't learned a thing until you've used what you've learned. To put it bluntly, knowing something isn't worth shit. This audiobook will be useless to you if you don't set yourself clear goals of using the techniques you have learned in this book. Start with 3 new techniques in every song you write from now on. Otherwise, you will get stuck where you are right now for the rest of your life. That's just how our brain operates. We don't remember anything unless we hear it repeatedly. So I suggest going through all the techniques again and writing down what you haven't used before. For reference, you can find the complete list at holisticsongwriting.com/addiction audio. Try them out. Even if you don't like the example songs showcasing the technique, figure out a way of making them work for you. You could be the first to ever use one of these in a completely new way. After learning about all of these techniques, now it's time for you to come up with some of your own. In part 3, we will look at how to create new techniques you can use in your songs today. And this is the only songwriting book in the world that teaches this. Having a unique set of writing tools is a huge, huge step in the direction of a sound that stands out. The techniques in this book are really just the beginning. Can you write a hit song with what you've learned so far? Absolutely. But if you want to take your songwriting to a whole new level, then you will find the skill to create your own techniques on the spot invaluable. We round off part 3 of this book with my moving borders concept, which is my favorite test to see if my song is doing its job, and a 10-step formula to writing an addictive song. But before we do all of that, let's listen once again to New Normal and apply all the techniques we learned. See if you can hear how the energy is controlled using hype, tension, and implied tension. I really like this intro. It sets a good mood and it sounds great. Did you notice the reverse guitar at the end, which adds some tension? Good. Here, just the fact that we hear vocals adds hype. The melody is also trading space, which increases hype even further. By ending each line on an ascending melody, the vocals also add tension. And did you notice the implied tension coming from the drums? We're really missing a bass drum here, which is good. So now we're getting to a part that doesn't follow the formula. The music goes up in hype, which is mostly due to the drums, but the vocals go way down. The phrases get longer, there's a lot of space, and the melody seems too ad-libbed for it to add enough hype. the second verse, which makes me think I missed the chorus. But on the good side, the hype here is definitely higher than in verse one. The expectation this gives me is that we're building up to a huge chorus very soon. Now I'm getting a little bit tired of the two notes in the melody, and I'd love to hear a little more variety and space, like in the first verse, where we had training space. This is great. Higher pitch, trading space, works. And so we get to the chorus. And unfortunately, it doesn't stand out enough for me to really notice it as such. The only clue I get is the repetition of the title and the panning of the vocals. Other than that, this section sounds a little too much like the one before it. There is trading space, but it's not enough to lift the section to the hype it needs to be at. Again, great melody, but getting a little tired of it. Also, the hype here is lower than in the verse before, which makes this one fall a little flat. This is just adjusting, trusting, I'm on a new path, and I know I won't go back. I'm getting used to every day without you, I'm doing just fine till I miss you. And again, this works. But then the melody goes down in pitch and the resulting hype is too low. And lastly, nothing to say about this part. I really like this, especially the little tom fill that ends nowhere. This is what's going on in my head as I listen to music. Start doing the same with pop songs and eventually your music. Part 3. Application. In this part, you will learn the exact steps of writing an addictive song from start to finish, how to become a more original writer, how to figure out if there's a section you might need to rewrite, and where to go from here. Creating your own techniques in 4 simple steps. Without any further ado, here's how to create your own unique set of tools you can use forever and ever in 4 simple steps. Step 1. Know which kind of compartment you are looking for. I like to think of my set of techniques as tools in a toolbox. There are 6 compartments: arrangement, harmony, rhythm, parts, lyrics, and production, all of which are divided into 3 more sub-compartments: hype, tension, and implied tension. For the sake of this discussion, let's decide that we're looking for a technique in the tension compartment of part writing. Step 2. Know what your technique needs to be able to do. In our example, we are interested in tension, so the concept is to lead the audience from one hype level to another. Step 3. Translate your technique from another compartment. If you are looking for a hype technique, try to remove the time element of a tension technique. Vice versa, when looking for tension, try to add a time element to a hype technique. And when looking for an implied tension technique, See how you could use the tensest moment from a tension technique throughout the whole section. So I'm looking for a tension technique in the part writing compartment, meaning I start by looking at the hype techniques. The most important ones that recur in every instrument are dynamics, range, modes, effects, and variety. If we add a time element to these five techniques, we get crescendos, ascending melodies, changing the vocal mode, creating tension with effects, and it seems that we have found something. Variety doesn't have a tension counterpart yet. If you can't find a counterpart in any of the techniques given in this book, try to come up with one of your own. For example, you could try to find more techniques for negative tension to get your transitions from chorus to verse under control. Or you start by going through every plugin in your DAW to see how you could use them to tell your story. Find out how they influence hype and see what you can automate to create tension. Think out of the box here. If you're making a music video for your song, think of visual ways to tell your story. Or consider your live performances. What could you do to display your song's energy curve through your facial expressions, body language, or light show? Step 4. Now, all that's left to do is find a technique that fits your description. So we need a time-based version of variety. Or in other words, the idea is to change the level of variety throughout a section. Since we want to move up in energy, how about a one-note melody that turns into something a bit more melodic in the second half of the section? You get the idea. So, right now, or once you got off the highway, take your phone out and create a new text document. Call it the toolbox. Divide it into the compartments arrangement, harmony, rhythm, part writing, lyrics, and production, and subdivide with hype, tension, and implied tension. Add more elements like light show, music video, or body language if you like, and subdivide these as well. Then start filling your personalized toolbox with techniques. You can start with the ones from this book here, but make sure you expand it with some original ones as well. And lastly, if you find a great technique, send me an email. I would love to know about it. Summary. The four steps to creating a lyricless storytelling technique. 1. Know which kind of compartment you are looking for. 2. Know what your technique needs to be able to do. 3. Translate your technique from another compartment or try to come up with one of your own. 4. Find a technique that fits your description. Shit test number 2. Moving borders. Does your song do its job? In this chapter, I want to share with you my favorite tool for analyzing songs to identify problematic sections. I call this moving borders, spelled B-O-R-E-D-E-R-S. The idea is to listen to your finished song, preferably after a day or two, and pretending you have never heard it before. Getting in this state of mind can be challenging, but is necessary for using this technique. It helps to bounce your track and listen to it in a new context. For example, you could put it in an iTunes playlist of comparable hit songs. I like to go for a little walk and listen to it on my phone. It doesn't really matter what you do, as long as you can recreate that feeling of hearing a song for the very first time. Once you are in this state, you are ready to take the next step, identifying the board line. The board line is the moment in your song when your audience changes the station, when they feel like they have heard what they needed to hear. In a bad song, this is often around the 15-second mark, when the vocals come in. If I had to guess from experience, I'd say that your average is probably around 1:15, when the second verse hits. The board line is your biggest enemy when it comes to storytelling. Just think how many listeners are never going to hear your fantastic finale because they turned off your song during the second verse or in the bridge. And attention spans for songs are getting shorter and shorter. Your board line occurs at the moment in your song when you're not giving your audience enough reasons to keep listening, when they don't like an element in your song, which is usually the style, vocals, or production, or when your listener is confused. This generally means they can't follow the story. These are the three biggest mistakes I hear writers make. Even professionals do it. Note that none of these happen consciously, so you can't just go out and ask people what they think of your song. If you do that, people will listen because you're forcing them to. If they like your finale, they will like your song. But that's not what is important, because if the rest of your song sucks, they never would have gotten there if you hadn't asked them to listen to the whole thing. We talked about having a friend draw your energy curve, and that's the best way to go if you haven't released yet. But if your song is already out there, track how well it's doing. You can check the average time people listen to your songs on YouTube using the site's analytics tool. This might just be the easiest way of figuring out where your board line is. Once you've identified your board line, move it back further and further. The best scenario is obviously if you can move it past the ending of your song. All the techniques you have learned in this book can help you in achieving this goal. Play with different levels of hype and increase tension when you feel like you're losing your audience's attention. Another way of moving the board line is to shorten your song. This is known as killing your babies or killing your darlings, and is always a difficult step for a writer, although it is usually the best solution. Consider this especially if your song is longer than 4 minutes. The feedback I give the most frequently to writers is to shorten either their second verse or the bridge. So don't push it. Watch how people react to your song and act accordingly. Summary. Put yourself into a state of hearing your song for the very first time. Identify your board line, and then move back your board line as much as you can using the techniques in this book. The Addiction Formula in 10 Simple Steps. We started this book with 10 steps to writing a convoluted song, so now it's time to present the process of writing a song from start to finish with the addiction formula in mind. Step 1. Write a section. Don't think, just write. The easiest way for me to come up with something is to just sit with my guitar or piano and play, play, play. Play some chords, find a good melody, go back and forth until the two form a unit. Go into your sequencer and start a new session. Record your vocals to a click, then add other instruments to taste. Step 2. Determine what you have. Now begins the judging process. Listen to your section and feel out what kind of section it is. Is it a chorus, verse, bridge, intro, or riff? Make your decision depending on what you learned about each section in the chapter Hollywood's Secret Formula. Step 3. Find your energy curve. Next, you want to figure out a compelling story to tell. Follow the steps we have learned in The Perfect Energy Curve to make an image in your mind of what your song's energy curve looks like. Grab a sheet of paper and commit to a curve. On the website, you can find the blueprints for my coordinate system if you like, or just sketch it out yourself. Write the section's names below the x-axis. Step 4. Make a rough outline. Open up your sequencer and set markers for each section of your song. Start with 8 bars each. Now copy and paste what you have to its respective positions in the song. Write the other sections, making sure that they roughly follow the specifications we have learned in the chapter called And Scene. Step 5. Set hype levels. If you've done a good job writing your sections, this will make this step much quicker. Consult your energy curve and make sure that each section has the proper amount of energy. Use whatever technique you want from part 2 of this book to set those hype levels. Strip out instruments if necessary. Step 6. Introduce tension. Now it's time to take care of all the transitions. So go through your song again and introduce tension where your curve tells you to. With this book, you have a long list of techniques you can use to accomplish this. Rewrite sections if necessary. Step 7. Play with implied tension. By now you should have a near-finished song. But before you finish it off, go through it once more and mute tracks here and there to see what effect it has on the music. See if you can create some implied tension this way. Even if your section goes way down in hype after muting an instrument, it might still work. Remember, Katy Perry's Firework goes way down in its pre-chorus and it still works out great. Step 8. Shit test number 1. The friend test. Send out your song to a friend of yours as described in The Perfect Energy Curve. I suggest sending it to various people, including non-musicians, to see what they think. If you get feedback, see if you agree. After shaking off the initial, "They just don't get how special my music is." And if you do agree, and believe me, your friends are never wrong, go back into your session and rewrite the critical bits. Step 9. Shit test number 2. Moving borders. After you've finished your production, let your song rest a day or two if possible. Then come back to it with a fresh set of ears and identify its board line as described in Moving Borders. Make sure you move it back as far as you can. And finally, step 10, release. Whole books have been written just about this process, but I won't go into this here. Just a couple of tips. As I said in Moving Borders, use YouTube analytics to figure out problem zones in your music, collect feedback from comments, and rewrite if you feel like you can significantly improve your song. But mostly, learn from your feedback for future songs. Figure out what didn't work and why. This is your best teacher because it is tailored specifically to your style. Don't miss out on this step. Summary. Write a section. Determine what you have. Find your energy curve. Make a rough outline. Set hype levels. Introduce tension. Play with implied tension. Move borders. Have a friend draw your energy curve. And release. Bonus chapter. A new kind of cool. I don't listen to pop music. All that stuff's formulaic anyways. It's not even real music. They're just churning out one song after the other. If they put in a little work, they could actually write some good music for a change. We've all heard someone, ourselves perhaps, say this at some point. And it is true that pop music, and especially hip-hop, is getting simpler each year. This in itself is interesting because it's going another way than, say, classical music or jazz, which got more and more complex as time went on. I think the main difference lies in the fact that classical and jazz are thinking man's music, whereas pop music is honing in on primal instincts, emotion, dancing, sex. And while we would expect musicians to work harder and harder each year to surpass last year's hits, the opposite happens. Minimal productions, more and more repetition, and shoddy performances. We are the lazy generation. We didn't grow up in wars, we have more food than we could ever eat, and we have the medicine to live till we are 120. And so whereas earlier generations had to take a clear stance on ethics and morals, we don't have to. And so we don't. This is why we don't vote, why music sounds like it sounds, and why kids today, if you ask them what they want to be when they grow up, don't say firefighter or policeman, they say they want to be famous. Hip-hop lyrics paint a picture of a generation that spends their days smoking weed, buying overpriced cars, and, trying to keep it PC here, making whoopee. We want it all, and we don't want to work for it. You may know where I'm going with this if you've watched my analysis of Taylor Swift's writing style on YouTube. Pop music is a reflection of our zeitgeist, and if you want to know what the future of pop will sound like, look at the kids today and ask yourself, what is unique about this generation? Admittedly, it's difficult to condense an expectation of what an entire generation will be like down to a set of songwriting techniques, but it's a start. Looking at pop music today, the trend of laziness shows its face in many places, but mostly in hip-hop. Since pop music tends to evolve from the bottom up, in other words, the streets dictate what's cool, I find trends in hip-hop are often a good indicator for the near future of pop music. And now that you understand where these lazy techniques are coming from, here's a, by no means complete, list. Please note that I'm not condemning any of them. In fact, I use all of these on a regular basis. And if you want that modern pop sound, I'd say give them a go as well. Some of these might feel odd to use at first because they seem to go against what we call proper songwriting. But I'm here to tell you that it's okay. You really can use these. And as always, if you don't like what others have done with the technique, find a way to make it sound good to you. Mumble rappers. Think Rich Homie Quan, a rapper so indifferent to proper enunciation that even native speakers don't understand whatever the hell he's talking about. Although, legend says he's the next Shakespeare. I've heard of recording sessions where the performers were too baked to properly perform. Think Designer's Panda, another just-got-out-of-bed performance. I saw a music video today that started with the proud exclamation, "I wrote this in a day." The message is loud and, well, mumbled. I'm too cool to even try. Autotune. Autotune certainly shaped the sound of this generation like nothing else. The effect makes it possible to turn a half-assed performance into a decent one, although it's more commonly used to make the vocals sound more electronic. Sloppy editing. We already talked about breathless vocal editing, where the breathing of the performer is cut out completely instead of just being lowered. Another byproduct of this carelessness is occasional clicks and pops when a track is being cut in the wrong place, without a fade-in. Cheap samples. Think Roland's drum machines 707, 808, and 909. Easily the most popular drum samplers of all time. They all sound pretty bad and outdated. There's no round robin, no velocities, they don't sound like an actual drum set. But they do have character. We use them because we like the imperfections, for the same reasons that Tarantino still shoots on film. They're just the right amount of B-movie, which makes them so popular for lazy drum programming. Best of all, samples of the 707, 808, and 909 can be found online for free, so you don't need to go out and buy expensive sample packs. Minimalistic productions. This isn't technically new, but a lot of hip-hop songs feature just one single loop that doesn't change throughout the entire song. There are no fills, no uplifters, no structure, nothing to guide us through the song. Playboi Carti's What was clearly produced in a matter of hours, and we're supposed to hear it. In certain genres, it's common practice to ride the gain on the microphones too hard, resulting in digital distortion, the arch-enemy of any classically trained producer. For an example of that, listen to Waka Flocka Flame's Ballin' Out. Bad grammar. I don't know if you noticed, but most rap lyricists don't seem to give a damn about no grammar. Putting prepositions at the end of sentences, making up nonsensical words like YOLO or bootiful, using double negatives and tons of filler words is common practice. Musical illiteracy. In lyrics, it's grammar. In music, it's functional harmony. I often feel as if modern songwriters consciously avoid classic cadences and voice leading because they sound too neat, too classical. deadmau5 writes his music with nothing but a mouse and a keyboard, and I don't mean the MIDI kind. To him, performing a track means moving tiny boxes in a piano roll, so he never actually plays along to his own tracks. And what he ends up writing is based on sound only. Music theory never enters the picture. And for the melody, deadmau5 will often just copy-paste the harmony track and put an arpeggiator on it. In a way, that's kind of genius if you think about it. If all of the notes in your melodies come from the underlying chords, there's no risk of writing a bad note. It's a clever workaround if you don't know music theory. Identity rhyming. Is this starting to read like a list of things you hate about modern pop music yet? Well, I got one more for you then. Identity rhyming. Or rhyming a word with itself. Listen to the aforementioned Ballin' Out, where the N-word is used to tie a bunch of lines together in this way. All of these techniques reflect a new kind of cool, an aesthetic that doesn't wear sunglasses. In an anti-movement to the big, fat, shiny cool of the 2000s, the core message today is, I'm too cool to even try. You can see this in the music videos as well. Think Drake's Hotline Bling, the dancing, the clothes. Think 21 Pilots' Stressed Out, which includes the band members riding tricycles and making music in their bedrooms. Or think Ray Sremmurd's Swang with the whitest dance moves ever. None of these performers seem to care what people may think, and it's this confidence that makes them so cool. But this indifference to the rest of the world goes hand in hand with another trend. With all the opportunities for personalization the internet gives us, be it Netflix, Instagram, Amazon, or YouTube, all with advertising following us around the Google Display Network, we become hermits. How did Trump become president? I didn't see anyone in my Facebook feed that would have voted for him. If you voted Trump, it's very likely that you could say the same about Clinton. To see how much the internet is tailored to you, go to an internet cafe and sneak a peek at someone else's Facebook feed. Or log out of YouTube. You will feel a little less at home than usual with video recommendations you wouldn't normally get. Some of which that are downright offensive to you. Before the internet, everyone watched the same TV shows. Now we watch shows that are tailored specifically to us. And while that's certainly a great thing, who would want to spend time watching something they don't fully enjoy, it also means we don't get challenged on our assumptions. We used to have to communicate with others and debate our differences. Now we just tune into our niche whenever we want to. Whatever beliefs you hold, the internet will agree with you. This is equally true when it comes to music. There's a niche for everyone. Why would I challenge myself with a new musical style when I could hear a slightly different version of a song I already know? All of this leads me to a few important insights. Being a successful songwriter doesn't mean you have to be better than everyone else or work harder than all your friends. Look at the millions of clicks Playboi Carti is getting for his half-assed productions. Is he a better writer than Taylor Swift? This I think we can objectively answer with no. But he's doing his thing, and no matter how much you hate it, his fans love him for it. They know that it's bad music, that it's shoddily written and produced, but that's the whole point. You can hear that there's no second guessing in the recording booth, no being afraid of hurting someone's feelings. I encourage you to be ruthless like that in your songs, too. It's tempting to write songs that everyone will like, but in the long run, you'll be better off if you write songs that most people hate, but some love. Make someone like your music and they will enjoy it and forget it. But make them fall in love with it and they'll tell all their friends about it. Above all, start. Instead of being annoyed at people like Playboi Carti, see it as an opportunity. You can do this too. Start putting your music out there, and if you're good, well, word on the internet travels fast. It might not happen overnight, but if you have a good idea and a few fans that love everything you're putting out, the rest is just scaling up. Doing the same with a bigger reach. With this book, you're holding the formula that can turn any, and I repeat, any of your ideas into a commercial song. It's not difficult, you just need to start. But start, you must. Music is a powerful thing that can save, change, and enrich lives like nothing else. The way I see it, you have a responsibility to become your best self and to put out as much music as you can to help the most people. Too many writers sit on their techniques and are too scared to use them. You are not one of those people. Once you're through this audiobook, don't throw it in a corner and never listen to it again. Keep it on repeat. Let this message infiltrate your brain. Start. Now. You know you want to, you know it's fun, and you know you're good at it. Don't waste your talent, and don't waste another second. Make plans, set things in motion. This is your first step. Start. Epilogue. I started writing this book 10 years ago when I was just a teenager. Looking through old notes on what to include in this book, I realized that what I've always been looking for in my career as a songwriter was a sense of knowing why we do what we do. When I discovered the three-act structure in music, that opened up a new world for me. I realized that beauty has universal rules. I began looking for the structure in other parts of my life, public speaking, card magic, marketing, psychology, board games, and I found it time and time again. And each time I discovered in a new discipline, it redefines music for me. Most of the insights in this book I discovered because of my fascination for the psychology of performing arts. What are the subliminal triggers that make me enjoy one magic performance more than another? Why did I buy this book and lost interest in another? Why did this workshop go better than the last? I used to get frustrated over people who didn't understand my music. What were they thinking? Were they even paying attention? I had some really great stories to tell, always had an innovative concept, but people still didn't listen. When I showed off my songs, they talked through them. It took me a while to figure out what was going on. I had forgotten that thinking of a story is just the first part. The part that resonates with people, that sticks with them, is how your story is told. If you can't communicate your idea through your music, and you can tell this is the case if you start your pitches with, "So the idea behind this song is blank," no one cares how groundbreaking your story is. It's the equivalent of listening to a public speaker with a stutter. He might have the greatest content in the world, but if we get distracted by his way of talking, we drift off. When I discovered the addiction formula, it completely changed my game. The first song I ever wrote that used it immediately won a contest, and I've since won many pitches with it. It has been my secret weapon for over 8 years now, and I sincerely hope you can use it for your songs. Good luck. Thank you for listening to The Addiction Formula. It has been a pleasure writing this book, and it is the first time I have shared some of my best-kept secrets with a public audience. But really, this book is just the beginning. If you want to go deeper with the addiction formula, I offer personalized Skype sessions where we can take a detailed look at what you are doing and see how we can make your writing process easier and more efficient. I also have a bunch of video courses where I take apart melodies, lyrics, drums, and many other subjects that you can find on holisticsongwriting.com. If you have any questions, comments, or a success story, I would love to hear those as well. Give me the good and bad. You can write me at me@holistic-songwriting.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. This has been The Addiction Formula, a holistic approach to writing captivating, memorable hit songs. Copyright 2017 by Friedemann Findeisen.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.